All right, continuing with our study of sin, we've looked at various things. Last week, we talked about Jeremiah 17. Jeremiah gives us some illustrations of sin as far as using things like a diamond to show that it's something that's very significant. It can last a long time. We talked about the attractiveness, the unattractiveness of sin, the fact that it can be pleasurable. People sometimes are public about it. People sometimes seek to hide it. There are people who attempt to be very clever about their sins. That was point seven. The fact that it can be associated with guilt, a lot of different things. We even discussed how people sometimes rate sin. So let's continue. We got down to about number 15 today, continuing our study of sin. Next week we have the tent meeting, and then after that we'll go back and pick up the book of Revelation. But this is trying to get us through a transition period. Luke 5:8, Romans 14:21, and then we'll talk about the second answer. Luke 5:8, who'd like to head over there and take care of that one for us? Steve, and then Lois, if you would pick up for us the passage after that, Romans 14, verse 21. All right. Would we say that Peter recognized his sin when he was in the presence of the Lord? He did. And what was his reaction? He said, well, I think you have there that idea, but is there anything else there? Let's read it one more time, Steve.
When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down on Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man."
Okay. He recognizes a sin. Clearly, we'd like to have it dealt with. But at this stage, what does he say? He says, "Depart from me, leave me alone. I recognize that sin is a terrific problem in my life." So as far as Peter's reaction, yet today when people, as they face their sins, what do they do with it a lot of times? You think they fall down on their knees, "God, forgive me? God, depart from me?"
They try to hide it.
Yeah, try to hide it. Or if they are forced to look at it, what's the attitude? Okay, there were a couple answers there. I don't know. I think you both said the same thing. They try to justify it. They poo-poo it. Well, everybody does that. It's no big thing. It's not like I'm a killer. They dismiss it. Then we come to the next one. Lois, I think this is you. Romans 14, verse 21.
It is good not to eat meat or to drink wine or to do anything by which your brother stumbles.
Okay. Can we lead another person into sin? I mean, personal sin is bad enough, Luke 5, verse 8. But we can lead people into sin. Whether we deal with that question from the standpoint of Romans 14 or from another standpoint, how can we do that? How can you lead somebody into sin? Could be a husband leads his wife. Could be an adult that leads a child into sin. How can we lead somebody into sin?
Bad example.
All right, that's going to be one good example of a good answer.
Another example where when they sacrificed an animal, they wanted to eat the meat afterwards. Mm-hmm. And if the person still believed that to be true under this dispensation, you could actually make it feel like he's hitting.
Yes. That's in the context, as far as, you know, they did have some issues as far as I'm not comfortable doing that. In this case, it was the eating of certain foods, meats. And, well, you know, everybody's doing it. Or this is fine. Come on. It's okay. You know, just this once. We don't know that that's exactly what's being said there. But we do have the general idea. And we know how people act today. There's that constant pulling and pushing and dragging. And people oftentimes will finally succumb and they do wound their conscience. So we lead people into sin as far as the context that way. But through the example, what else? How do we lead people into sin?
You force them into it.
All right.
Or you bully them into it physically or verbally.
Yes.
Any other way.
Yeah. People are sometimes literally beaten into sin, and it's, you know, kicking and dragging, they finally go. So there are a lot of different ways, and Paul makes it clear in Romans 14 that this is not something that we want to do. God takes this very, very seriously. Matthew 18, 21 and 22, and then back to the Old Testament, Exodus 16, 7. Who'd like to be our Matthew 18, 21 and 22 reader? Josh, from the Old Testament, Exodus, I said 6, I think it's 16. Exodus 16, 7. Exodus, Brian. Exodus 16, verse 7. All right, in thinking about sin, we just talked about, you know, Peter, Luke 5. We know that we can lead people into sin. So now let's take this in a slightly different direction. Can we sin? And can we sin against another person? Matthew 18, 21 and 22.
Then Peter came up and said to him, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? As many as seven times?" Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven.
Okay. Can we sin against another person? Yeah. How can we do that? How can I sin against you? How can you sin against me?
You have an adulterous affair.
All right. There are some things that can actually be some form of physical contact. It could be a sexual matter. It could be violence. It could be a verbal attack. So you have those examples. What else? All right. You know, that's another thing. If, you know, that happens sometimes in a financial transaction, a clerk may overpay you. You know, you're owed $2.20 and there's a mistake. They look at the register and they give you the 20 instead of the 2 plus the change. So, you know, you sin against that person or really against the store.
You could sell them a car or something and did something wrong with it and you're not telling them.
Yeah. The Old Testament, especially the prophets, they have a lot to say about that as far as unjust balances. They would hollow out the balances and figure out how to cheat people. You've seen the old graphic, right? The lady's out at the meat market. She's buying chicken, and she's cheating on one side of the scale, and the grocer, he's cheating on the other side of the scale, and it kind of balances out. But people have been known to do that for a long time, right?
Financial areas, but I was thinking.
Okay, yeah, there are a lot of things. You know, you go down to the stockbroker. And a broker says, this is a great stock, buy this. Well, is it really that great of a stock? No. Why is he pushing it? All right, he knows that he's going to get a big commission. I mean, that's what the agency that he works with is wanting to push right now. So he's going to get a good commission off that. And then if it's a bummer and you sell it, then he makes money on the back end as well. So, you know, that's sinning against the person. So a lot of different ways. Lawyers, you know, you call in, talk to them for a little while. They're supposed to bill in 15-minute increments. You know, he's charging you $150 an hour. You call in for a two-minute call, $150. You know, he racks up. Well, he's cheating you. You know, he should prorate that. So a lot of things in the financial realm that have to do with money. You think you can cheat people on time, sin against the company? You know, if you're supposed to be there for 8 hours and, you know, you're working six or seven and a half and they don't say go home early, well, you know, you've sinned against them. Somebody else threw up a hand. Was it you, Brian, or?
I thought about slander.
Okay. All right, that's another way. And that's a way where people don't see it, and they may or may not learn about the slander, but we can sin against people in that way as well. A good example of speech. Okay, let's pick up then with Brian's reference, Exodus 16, verse 7.
In the morning, then you shall see the glory of the Lord, for the hearers are murmuring against the Lord, and what are we murmuring against us?
Okay, sin is most certainly an act against, how would you fill in the blank?
God.
So we sometimes think, well, yeah, I hurt him. But ultimately, when we think about sin, it can time and time again be traced back to God. And people may not be bothered very much by it. A person may say, well, you know, yeah, I got that gossip. I got that slander. It doesn't hurt me very much. But, you know, sin ultimately goes back to God, and especially when we think about God's people. Remember the case of Saul? He's out there on the road, ends up in Damascus. And in that whole exchange, what do we find Saul being accused of? Why persecutest thou not my people? Me. Well, he wasn't directly persecuting God. I mean, it wasn't like he was jabbing God, but by jabbing God's people, what was he doing? Ultimately sinning against God. So when we think about slander and some of the other things that we can do and sometimes may do against God's people, ultimately it's a sin against God. Anything that you want to... Okay, Stan. Okay, let's think through that for a second. Are we saying, let's say that I sin against you.
And if I don't respond to that, is that not a sin on my part against you? Because the scripture says if you have something against a brother, you're to leave your gift at the altar and go tell them. If we neglect a sin against ourselves, no matter how we might feel about it, then we let that other person, I don't want to say get away with it, but in their own minds, they may have, and then they don't respond properly.
Okay, I don't want to go too far down that road because we could consume the whole class on that question.
Okay.
Because here is a situation where I think you have to put that in degrees. For example, let's say that some people go out to eat after lunch, and I coordinate that event. I don't invite you. And today, for whatever reason, you were really looking for someone's company. Have I sinned against you? Yeah. So when we look at that word sin, it means harmatia. It means missing the mark. So would we then take that to an extreme view where we say that every little slight, for example, if I didn't shake your hand and you expected a handshake at the end of services, you know, have I sinned against you? And you can just go, you know, on and on and on with the various examples. If we take that in the most literal sense, you know, then we're going to be offending, you know, everybody, you know, at least once a week or probably at least a couple times a month. So as you think about that, and I could be wrong on this, but as I think through that, to me there seems to be a lot there as far as, you know, for example, Christian maturity, just as we deal with people in life. There are going to be some people who are easily offended, and there are going to be some people, I mean, unless you go out and, you know, tow their car to a junkyard and have it smashed, they're probably not going to be, you know, too, just because of the nature of the person. So it seems to me that you have here a little leeway as far as people deciding, is this something that should be exposed to the steps that we have in Matthew chapter 18, rather than saying, well, okay, you know, we've got this little offense, and I'm going to use the word petty to help illustrate the point. I would not argue that we have an obligation for every single thing that comes up in life. You know, sometimes things just, and you know this as well as I do, sometimes you just got to look at some passages and use some common sense. So for the person who says, I never want to do that, well, to me then, you know, that's an issue very likely, because here's a person who says, I'm just not going to do that command. But here's another person who says, I'm going to, you know that that's what is required. If there's a circumstance where I feel like someone has really sinned against me, then it's time to go ahead and employ this. But until that time comes, I'm going to be aware of that passage and going to apply it, but in the right set of circumstances. It's kind of like church discipline as well. You have the same kind of thing there. You know, when do you exercise that? Well, congregation A may use it at this point. Congregation B may use it at this point. They both believe in it. But as far as actually coming out and saying, okay, this is, you know, the exact law for, you know, every little thing, good sense and discretion to me would seem to be important there. Anybody want to add a quick follow-up to that? Sure. Like the workplace. Everybody has little things that bug them in the workplace, right? But are you going to go down and file a grievance over every little thing? You know, you got metal shavings over there in the corner. I like a clean house. I got a, like, you know, clean shop. Well, we can live with that. But, you know, there, if it's a safety issue where you've got some things out on the floor that maybe are liquid and somebody can get hurt, you know, people are being sloppy over there, and I'm working in that area as far as some other people, and that's got to be addressed and some other things. And there again, you get back to what Stan was saying. In this case, you have something that's perpetual. You have something that's habitual. Well, that again is going to put you in a different category than, you know, he didn't shake my hand, she didn't look at me, and, you know, she moved my purse of services, and this guy sat in my pew, you know, because he came in late, you know, those kinds of things. We should be able, you know, the Bible says bear with one another, you know, love one another. So somebody takes our pew, or somebody doesn't, you know, invite us out to lunch. I mean, we should have enough Christian maturity to say, okay, you know, that's no big deal to me. I mean, it might have been my preference to have my hand shaken. It might have been my preference to have talked to this person or gone out to lunch or whatever. But, you know, for me, that's not really an issue. We'll catch them next week or something like that. So it's really kind of a two-edged street. And like I say, we can tie up the whole class with that. But those are some basic parameters that I would think would be helpful there. Anybody else? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you're intentionally not inviting somebody.
Right.
Just, I don't know.
Yeah. And then after you tell somebody that what they're doing, they continue to do it. You know, I just,
yeah.
I don't know, I guess maybe I'm sinning, but I can't.
Yeah. Well, no, there should be that communication within the family that happens. You know, husbands annoying the wife. I learned the other day that my dad wore his watch 24/7, got in the habit of that because of work. And wore it to sleep at night, and he was scratching up the headboard. Mom said, you got to take your watch off. You know, forget it one night and scratch up the headboard a little bit. Well, okay. But, you know, day after day after day, hey, you know, this is creating an issue, so let's work something out here. And it's the same thing in the church, common sense. One time or a couple times, but if it's a habitual thing, then let's go ahead and work it out. Okay, enough said on that point? All right. Let's then move to point 20 and get some other helpers here. We do want to finish the sheet today, and I think we're on track to do that. Numbers 20, 1 Samuel 13, Luke 15. Three passages. Lisa, you want to take our Numbers 20, verses 10 to 12 reference? Thank you. After that, 1 Samuel 13, 11 to 13. All right, Betty. And then we'll look at Luke 15, verses 13 through 16. Luke 15, 13 through 16. All right, Josh has got that. Let's go back to the Old Testament. Numbers chapter 20, verses 10 through 12.
Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and the beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them.
Very good, thank you. Suppose a preacher stands up and says, all right, you rebels, what kind of sermon you think you're going to hear that morning? It's probably going to be a rough one. Moses was angry. Anytime you have an address that begins with, you rebels, it's probably not going to be something that's easy to listen to. The question then is, do some of God's finest people sin? Yeah. I mean, Moses is angry, and you might be able to say some of that was just. But at the same time, he did sin. What was the sin? He hit the rock. God said, you speak to the rock, but Moses seems to have been just so upset. He smites the rock. Well, today, as we think about people, are we going to have some of God's finest people sin? Yeah. Now, again, going back to the thought that we had just a few minutes ago, sometimes before people grow enough in the Christian faith, they can look at people. It could be the preacher. It could be the elder. It could be the person who converted them. It could be a young person looking at mom and dad. And their view of them, as far as that person living the Christian life, is wherever they put them. On that huge pedestal. And this person is not going to sin. Or if they sin, what kind of sin is it going to be? Just a little slip here and there. But if they have a major incident in their life, for a lot of people, that shatters them. Why? How could that person have done that? Well, what's the answer to that question? Here you had a person got involved with drugs. Person got involved with alcohol. Person got involved with theft. Person got involved in sexual sin. Person got involved with theft. And they think, you know, how could you have done that? I can tell you a story about a fella. This came to my attention about a year ago. Worked with him in New Zealand. As far as that country, I mean, he was the guy. Did all kinds of mission work. And he apparently had an affinity for handguns. He tried to smuggle a handgun back to New Zealand. Got caught. And there were some people, it about destroyed their faith. You know, they saw the picture of him being carted off to jail and so forth. I mean, this is the guy. I mean, this is our leader. This is the fellow that we've worked with on mission campaigns. And how could he possibly do that? Well, what's the question? Devil's always out there, isn't he? Always roaming. And even God's best people sometimes are going to fail and sin. So if we've not learned that lesson, that's an important lesson for us, because we can have good, I think it was Jeff, you used the word example earlier. We can have some really good examples, but those examples are not perfect. And those examples, and hopefully the people that are good examples are not going to slip up in those kinds of ways, but it does happen. And we need to be mindful of that. There was somebody that flashed a hand. Did you want to follow up on that thought? Okay. Then let's move to our next passage. This is going to be point 21. What sometimes leads people into sin? Now, we've got the example of anger from point 20, Moses, the rock. But let's see what we find in 1 Samuel 13, 11 to 13.
And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now unto me to
Okay? Saul was not authorized to offer sacrifice. He was not a priest. And yet, what does he say? He says, I forced myself. Our question, what sometimes leads people into sin?
Impatience.
All right, that's going to be a good summary answer. People sometimes just get impatient and, well, but this is one of the things that we've talked about before. A good example of it is Moses, the Red Sea. Got Egypt behind, got the water in front of you. And what's it look like as far as options? There are none. It looks pretty hopeless, and it looks like time has run out. But one of the lessons from God is, you hang on, because the Calvary may come to the rescue when? At the last minute. Well, Saul should have had some faith that God would have done that. And I'll tell you, if you've ever been in one of those situations, you're praying about something, and you're getting closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to the edge, and it looks like you're about ready to fall off, and no hope is in sight, it is not a fun place to be. And it is a time where patience is going to be tested as well as faith. But those are the times that help you build faith, where you have to say, okay, God, this is something that we can't handle. We have faith in you. We're going to trust you. And, you know, we're kind of watching the clock. But in the end, you're the one that we think that, we know that we have got to trust in you. All right, anything else before we look at the 22nd point? Okay, point 22, Luke 15, verses 13 to 16.
Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything.
When we think about sin, do people sometimes escape the earthly consequences? Yeah, certainly times. We can see probably from our lives, we deal with people and they get away with some stuff, and in our minds we may wonder, well, where's God? He surely sees what this person is doing, and it seems like they're able to do all these bad things and there never seems to be a consequence. They always seem to get one more chance, or they are allowed to continue without any kind of consequence. And if we did a fraction of the stuff that they're doing, we wouldn't stand for a minute, but yet they seem to continue to get away with it. But are there not also times where sin pays some earthly consequences and pays them in full? Yeah. You think about this guy. What were some of the consequences for his sin?
Hunger.
All right. He's hungry, and most people would say, well, that's a problem. What else?
He's greedy.
Yeah. You think about, here's a fella, he had it all, apparently, when he was back at Dad's house. I mean, you got servants, and you know, Dad's got the shoes and the robe and the ring and so forth. I mean, it looks like life is pretty good back home. But now he's out there in a pig pen. And there are some people that like pigs. But I don't get the impression from this particular story that this guy liked pigs. And out there, he's so hungry, what's he willing to eat? Swine food. Pig food. He's away from home. He's in a far country. He has wasted his money. You know, you ever made a purchase and a little later thought, man, I wish I had that money back? Bought a car and thought, oh boy, I wish I could go back and reverse that transaction. Bought some furniture and you thought, oh, this is not as comfortable as what we thought. Or didn't hold up after 6 months or a year. I mean, most of us can look back. Or you buy a painting and you think it's so pretty or something else, and then after a while it's not quite so attractive. Well, this fellow, you think he looked back maybe on some of those parties and thought, I wish that I would have held on to some of that cash. So when we think about sin, it does have some very, very serious consequences at times. And it can lead to hunger, it can lead to thirst, it can lead to bad health, premature death, many, many things, fractured family relationships, many different items. All right, before we move on, anything that you want to discuss? All right, let's take care of three more references. 1 Kings, let's go back there, 1 Kings 16, 29 and 30, Steve. After that, we'll also be in the Old Testament, Amos 4, 6 to 12. Let's take Jeff, I'm going to take you for the next one. That's Jeff Burt and Jeff Martin. Let's leave you with Amos 4, Jeff Burt, 1 Kings 16, 30 to 33. 1 Kings 16, 29 to 30.
And in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did which was evil in the sight of Jehovah above all that were for him.
Do important people sin?
Yes.
Yeah. You think about the president, and we may not think about him too often, or maybe one day we'll have a lady president, but presidents sin. Kings sin. Our senators, our congresspeople, they're all involved with sin. And that's why, you know, they need the gospel. But sometimes we can look at people, it could be, you know, whether it's a secular position or someone's doing something in the church, all people sin. Romans 3:23, Jews and Gentiles are under discussion there, but it's a good reminder that all people, all nations, if they're old enough to know right from wrong, they are accountable for sin, and they obviously need the solution. Okay, Amos 4, verses 6 to 12.
And I have also given you cleanness of teeth in all your cities, and want of bread in all your places. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. And also I have withholden the rain from you, and there will not be 3 months to the harvest. And I cause it to rain upon one city, and cause it not to rain upon another city. One piece was rained upon, and the piece whereupon it rained not withered. So two of the three cities wandered into one city to drink water, but they were not satisfied. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. I have smitten you with blasting and mildew, when your gardens are your, and your vineyards and your fig trees and your olive trees increased. The palmer worm devoured them. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. And I have sent among ye the pestilence after the manner of Egypt. Your young men have I slain with a sword, and have taken away your horses, and I have made the stink of your camps to come upon your nostrils. And have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. And I have overthrown some of you as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. And you were as a firebrand plucked out of the burning. Yet have ye not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Therefore thus will I do unto thee, O Israel, and become, because I will do this unto thee, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel.
Thank you. Good reading. At the beginning of verse 6, God says, I've given you cleanness of teeth. You think he provided dental care for the Hebrews? Got clean teeth. What's he mean? Okay. Well, as you continue to read through there, I sent the palmer worm. What's the worm going to do to your crops? Help them or hurt them? All right, going to destroy them. And then it says, I allowed some rain to be over here, but not over here. No rain on your crops. What's going to happen? They're going to dry up. Not going to have any crops. So as you consider those additional verses, you've got, and pestilence too. God says, I've sent disease, I've sent insects, and I've sent no rain. And now you've got clean teeth. What are the clean teeth? Famine. No food. And God says, you have not returned to me. You've been disobedient as a nation, Israel. And these are some of you know, you've lost some of your young men. The question then is, when we talk about sin, we can talk about it on an individual level, as we've discussed. But can sin also occur on a national level? Yeah. The book of Obadiah talks about Edom. That would be interesting if we had it the other way. But Edom is condemned because of the great pride. And God says, I'm going to bring it down. Throughout the Old Testament, and even there are some indications in the New, that God is not enthused about national sin. If you remember what we talked about last week, when are people punished for sin? All right, and ultimately in eternity as well, but God's able to deal with people in eternity. Nations, though, are dealt with in time. People are dealt with in eternity, sometimes in this life. And God pays attention to how nations are going to act. Anything that you want to add or ask in that point? Okay, Jeff, I think we're back to you, and that's Jeff Burt for 1 Kings 16:30-33.
And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord, more than all who were before him. And as it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, he took for his wife Jezebel, the daughter of Bethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went to serve Baal and worshipped him. He erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. And Ahab made an Ahab did more to
Now that's bad. When God says, you not only provoke me, but you stir me to a state of anger which is greater than I've had in the past, something bad's going on. Why was God angered? What's specifically in the text? He went and became involved with false worship. When we think about sin, do we sin by false worship? Yeah. We have two choices. We either do it God's way or we do it some other way. And man has a lot of different ways, man's way. What's our world think, though, when it comes to false religion? No big deal. As long as it pleases the people, as long as it draws the crowds, it is perfectly fine. God says it is a sinful thing. It's going to separate you from me. Going to services is not enough. We've got to do things in the way that God has authorized. Okay, let's get three or four more helpers here. Our next one is going to come from Proverbs 5. I'm going to take that one just to kind of highlight some things. And then Matthew 5:28, who'd like to take care of that one for us? All right, I thought we had a hand. Matthew 5:28, Lois, Josh, let's get you headed to 1 Samuel 15:18-26, and then 1 Samuel 15:23. 1 Samuel 15, verse 23, who wants to take care of that one? All right, Lisa. Okay, headed back to the book of Proverbs, chapter 5. You have here a chapter that talks about fornication, seduction. He talks about the lips of a strange woman, how they drop honey, a mouth that's smoother than oil, and then her feet go down to death. In other words, that's a consequence. Her steps are going to take you to Sheol. And he says her ways, verse 6, are unstable. She doesn't know it. And then there is the call to hearken, verse 7, don't be involved with her, verse 8. You're going to give your honor to others and your years are going to be cruel. That's not a wise choice. Then you have the mourning in verse 11. The heart despised reproof, wasn't willing to take the warnings about fornication. Verse 15, he says, drink waters out of thine own cistern, running waters out of thine own well. In other words, you be involved with your spouse, your mate. Rejoice with the wife of your youth. Verse 18, find your satisfaction with her. Verse 19, don't be ravished with the love of a strange woman. Verse 20, because 22, his own iniquity shall take the wicked, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. So here's something that has affected a lot of people throughout time. Solomon understood that, and he said, listen up, this is not something that you want to be involved with because it's going to have some very, very negative effects. And we know that in part because of David's life, as we see from Psalm 51. Okay, Matthew 5:28.
But I say to you that everyone who looks on a woman to lust for her has committed adultery with her already in his heart.
Okay, now this goes back as far as the thought to what we talked about last week, as far as greater, can some sins be greater? I mean, all sin is sin. And the smallest thing is enough to condemn an accountable person. But would you say that looking on a woman or looking on a man to lust after him is going to be the exact same as actually involving, becoming involved in an illicit relationship?
New Testament says it is.
Okay. It does say that, but let's draw a parallel. John says that if we hate our brother, we are a
murderer.
Okay, 1 John. Would you say that there's any difference? I'll say Ray made the answer. So let's say I hate Ray. Am I a murderer? Well, John says I am. I don't love him. I hate him. He's a murderer. No, not literally. But is there any difference between that and me actually taking out a gun and shooting him? It does. And that sin, it may not go to that additional level where there is any physical action involved. So both are sin. So there is that distinction where you do have that set in the New Testament, but at the same time, we do need to realize that there is that point as well. So we have there that question in Matthew 5:28. Can a person sin just in the heart? Sure. You know, we can hate one another. We can be jealous of one another. We can do a lot of things. You know, I can have the desire to steal from you, or you can have the desire to steal from me. And that desire is wrong, but if that desire is not fulfilled, then we have stopped short of that actual act. Stan, you had a thought.
Hate can literally consume a person.
It can.
So that really narrows that line between whether you sin in your heart or whether you do it actually. Because if a hatred gets so bad as to consume you, there's still somebody been destroyed there.
Yes. Well, the Hebrew writer talks about the root of bitterness. And to me, that's an interesting figure for a couple of reasons. As Glenda mentioned, sin has to begin somewhere. It's a seed. And maybe if we put it in terms of seeds, you know, grass seed, since grass doesn't grow that tall. I mean, you've got the seed there. That's obviously the beginning point. And then as that grass seed grows, it's never, you know, we know what the height is going to be, and it's not going to be like a corn stalk. But there is that process there, which is shorter than some other seeds. And that whole process, I mean, it's growing the whole time. And you would definitely say this is something that exists. But if we compare that to sin, you know, sin may not get to the full 3-inch length. It may be, you know, just popping through the ground and so forth. There may not be a long road there, but there are some stops along the road where it can increase, grow in intensity, and may not be as full grown as some other things.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it says, look on her to lust. That tells me there is a possibility of looking at an individual who is not your mate, and you don't reach that point.
Right.
So, is it a matter of the difference between temptation and lust?
Are you done? I don't want to cut you off. Okay. This is something we've not discussed over the years, so we'll figure out something to do with the sheet in a couple weeks. We're not going to get through it. But I did have this discussion with an older brother who had never been married several years ago in Fort Wayne. And the only time I've ever discussed this with anybody, and like I say, it's never been discussed here. And you could apply this to some other things. Let's say that you're in a position where you're looking for a mate, you know, either, you know, widowed, divorced, scripturally and whatnot. If you're in that situation, are you going to pay any attention to what a person looks like? Yeah. I mean, that's just going to, I mean, you're not going to just say, okay, I'm going to close my eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Okay, you sound good. And pick the person. We are going to pay some attention to individual looks. You know, height, and people pay attention to a lot of different things. All right, but yet, as that process is taking place, is it the tongue is wagging out, and man, you know, kind of licking the chops like a dog, you know, before a piece of meat? No. So we do have a distinction there between open lust, or you could say secret lust, and we're in the evaluation stage, if you will. We're just trying to go ahead and find somebody that might be a suitable mate. And if you think about that, do we not have this same kind of thing in some other things? For example, you're going downtown, and ladies sometimes talk about window shopping. All right, you know, and they're thinking, well, you know, that's nice. Here's some dishes, or there's a guy out there, he's looking at lawnmowers, and he thinks, I'd like that one. Can we window shop? Sure. But it's also possible to go out, and we see that lawnmower, or we see those dishes, or we see the piece of furniture, and what's your attitude? I've got to have it. Or we know that so-and-so has those dishes, so-and-so has that lawnmower, so-and-so has this and the other thing, and where are we at mentally? All right. Jealousy, envy, maybe some anger. These other emotions begin to develop. And that's why I say, if you think about it as a seed process, you know, there are various points along the process where you can look at. And at a certain level, you know, there may be, you know, right there as far as a germination stage, there may be an interest in some things. But at that stage, I don't know that I can make a case that that's sinful. Because here you're looking at something, you're considering something. For example, I know there are some couples over the years, Teresa and I always try to be careful when she says or asks this question, you know, what do you think she looks like? You're watching TV and you see a lady pop up there and you think she's pretty? That is a tough question. Why are you asking? So, but you know, it's not a matter of lust in that particular case. You know, maybe it's a hairstyle, maybe it's a style of glasses, or maybe there's something else that's going on. And in that case, you know, you can give some honest feedback. And it's the same kind of thing. You know, you're out with a friend and you're looking at some things as far as shopping. You say, well, what do you think about that? And it is an innocent question, trying to go ahead and access or gain information for a particular reason. So we talked about degrees before, and this kind of falls into that same category, that you have to look at all the things that are in play, consider the intents, the circumstances, and so forth. But you do have some cases where lust is obviously occurring, and in those situations, both for men and women. You know, if you've got some women, you sometimes can have some ladies together and say, man, that's a hot guy. Well, you know, that may be more in the observation category than in the, you know, I'm, you know, in the very lustful, you know, thinking process. So, again, there are a lot of things that go into that, and thankfully judgment is going to be an individual thing because God knows what's in the heart for those things. All right. Somebody want to throw something else on top of all that?
Well,
Harvey?
Well, I feel like if you look at a person, it could be anybody that's pretty or good looking, you still don't have to bust out.
Sure.
Just looking at it, you know, yeah, it's good looking. But that's as far as it has to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, we have that same kind of thing in other areas of life. Somebody says, I bought this new thing. I bought a new car, or, you know, we bought a new house, or we bought a new boat, or we bought a new RV. Come over and take a look at it. Remember what Paul says in Romans 12? Rejoice with them who rejoice. Now, I may not fully understand all the reasons why I wrote that, but you can easily relate that passage to that. I am so glad that you got the new boat. I'm glad you got the new house. I'm glad, you know, somebody, a lady comes in and starts flashing around a new ring. Look at my new ring. We've been married for X number of years. Hubby bought me a ring. Or, you know, we're engaged now, and look at my big engagement ring. We're happy for you. Might that ring be fancier than what you have?
Sure.
Yeah? Might his boat be better than your boat?
Yeah.
Yeah. May not even have a boat. But we can rejoice with those people. That's the right activity. Whereas the devil says, you begin to lust, you begin to envy, you begin to get mad. You have jealousy and so forth. So, again, there is that right reaction. Anybody else? Okay, we didn't get through the sheet. I don't know if we're going to finish it or not. So if you would, 2 weeks from today, bring it back, and we'll kind of see what happens with it. Thank you.